You might still be writing your 2020 New Year's resolutions, but one resolution you might have neglected, getting closer with your friends. It's not always easy to do that as adults with busy lives. But our next guest says there are big benefits that come with having close friendships and some tangible steps we can take to try to build them. Sue Johnson is a clinical psychologist and author. She's also the founder of the International Center for Excellence in Emotionally Focused Therapy. Her work focuses on bonding, attachment, and romantic relationships. And you can join in with your own suggestions, stories, and questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. Do you find it harder to make friends as you get older? Have you found it hard to keep friends at whatever stage you are in life? Do you have that one friend you can count on? They'll be there for you, as the song goes. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Sue Johnson is with us. Sue, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, you're most welcome. Happy to be here.
Is it common that people find it harder to make friends as they get older, as they move on in life?
I think to a certain extent, but hopefully, especially if they're listening to all the folks that work with me, they've started to understand about the key things that create a friendship. And so maybe they can be more deliberate about making their friendships. But in a way it is, because adults go off and they get caught up in their own lives and their jobs and, you know, working too hard, and they don't spend the time to, they don't play on the rugby team anymore, and they don't go out to the school dance. And so in some ways it is. But hopefully we get better at it as we get older.
Before we get into the how of things, let's talk about the why. What are some of the some of it seems obvious, but what are some of the benefits of having friendships and close friendships in particular?
Well, over the last 20 years, psychologists have really started to understand the nature of bonding and just how important it is. And it's incredibly clear, by which I mean there's like hundreds of studies on this. It's incredibly clear that as human beings, we need this sense of intimate connection with a few other people on this planet the way we need oxygen. And that, you know, we've kind of put that down in our society a bit. We've seen it as somehow that adults shouldn't be needy, or that there's somehow you're supposed to be self-sufficient. I tell my colleagues the only self-sufficient human beings are dead human beings. We're born to bond, with, to connect, to be with others. And all the research is very clear. If you have one or two others, a partner or a really good friend that you can turn to, that you feel has your back, that you can confide in, that you matter to, your whole nervous system responds to that. You tend to be calmer, more resilient, more sure of yourself, more confident, more able to deal with the world. I could go on and on and on. I mean, it's literally like it impacts your physical health. You know, the best predictor of whether you have another heart attack or not after the first one isn't the severity of the first heart attack. It's the quality of your most intimate relationship, which is one reason why we've just created this big program for cardiac couples and their partners for a big hospital up in Canada. I mean, it's getting clearer and clearer that we are not just social animals. We're bonding animals, and we need close connection with other people like we need oxygen.
Sometimes I think we focus on quantity, how many people like my post on Facebook or Instagram, depending on my age, or how many people show up at my birthday party, over quality. Is that a mistake?
That's a huge mistake. You know, it's really, we're not talking about social media. You know, I don't know why people call them friends, because they're not friends. You know, basically, most time you never meet all these people. A friend, a real friend, is someone who, when you're down and vulnerable, you can tell, I'm really down and vulnerable, and they'll take you in their arms. That's a friend, and you don't do that over the internet. So there's lots of research that actually, in spite of the internet, we're becoming lonelier and lonelier in our society, and it's a mental health, physical health problem. It's not just icing on the cake to have friends. It's loneliness is it's kind of like, I think of it as like, you make somebody lonely without these close connections and knowing they matter to somebody else. It's like taking a fish out of water. You know, the fish will gasp for a little while and survive. But basically, our water, the water we swim in, our ecological niche, is close connection with others. And if we don't have it, we don't do well.
Talking to Sue Johnson, clinical psychologist, founder of the International Center for Excellence in Emotionally Focused Therapy. We're talking about friendships, the why and the how to build closer, maybe more intimate friendships. Sue, let's get into the how. You know, as a kid, we can ask somebody to play on the swing set with us and see if something blooms. As adults, it's harder to pull that off. What are first steps that we can take to try to build a closer friendship?
Well, I think part of it is that it's who you choose to connect with. You know, we, like, I couldn't have said this to you two decades ago even, but basically we understand now that there's a structure to your emotional life. There's a structure to DNA. There's a structure to your intimate relationships. And all the research tells us that the quality of an intimate bond in the end is about emotional responsiveness and openness. So we help couples. We've been helping couples for the last 30 years. We get the best results anywhere on this planet for helping couples repair their relationships. And we talk about hold-me-tight conversations. When couples have these hold-me-tight conversations, it predicts success at the end of therapy and them having a great relationship years later. It predicts intimacy and satisfaction and all these good things. And what is a hold-me-tight conversation? Hold-me-tight conversation is where both people can be open, accessible, responsive, and engaged. The big question is, are you there for me on an emotional level? A-R-E. Are you accessible, responsive, and engaged? And in good relationships, the answer to that question is yes. So the issue is, you know, my kids, when they're starting to date, said to me, okay, Mom, you know, you're so clever. How do I pick a boyfriend? I say, hey, girl, you know, never mind. What you're telling me is you want the best looking guy in the room. You know, how about talking to guys for a bit and seeing who gives you eye contact, who responds to you emotionally, who's interested in you, who responds to what you say, that you feel like they're tuning into you, they've got you, they're connected with you. That's the guy to follow and try and make into a friend.
There's a stereotype, a cultural belief anyway, that men are worse at this kind of thing than women, that they are less willing to have that intimate connection, especially with maybe another guy as a friend. I guess, yeah. True or false, Sue?
Well, I hate to say it, but I think it's basically true. But let's be clear here. When I say it's true, I don't think we're talking about the inherent nature of men.
Right.
Because all the research says that when you take little boys, little tiny boy infants, they're just as emotional. They're just as needing connection. They respond to love and care just like little girls do. So it's not about biology per se. It's about how we socialize and all our ideas about what masculinity is. You know, it's like I work with a lot of military folks and they'll tell you even now, you know, that basically if you're going to go into war, you've got to suck it up. Well, maybe you do have to suck it up, be able to suck it up if you're going into a war situation. But you try to live in a permanent state of shutdown where you're not open and you're not responsive to other people and you don't let them in and take risks. You don't let them see your vulnerability. That's the issue. We've taught men that somehow it's unmasculine to be vulnerable, which is insane. I mean, that's you've got the same nervous system as a woman has. You've just trained it differently. What we see in therapy, which I love, is that when we work with men to help them repair their relationship, or when they do our relationship education program, our Hold Me Tight, our relationship groups, which are all over the U.S., that when men come into those groups or into, you know, therapy, they respond just fine because we basically give them safety and tell them, we want to hear about your vulnerability. It's okay. You're a human being. Like, you know, what's happening for you right now? You're shutting your wife out because you're telling me you feel like you're failing. Have you ever thought of turning and telling her, it hurts to feel that you're disappointed in me? And the guy looks at me and says, are you insane?
Oh, no.
And I say, no, I'm not. Try it. And he does. And what he blows his mind is that his lady bursts into tears and said, I didn't know you felt that way. I just thought you didn't care. I didn't know that you were worried about that. I'm only disappointed because I don't get enough of you. I'm not disappointed in you. I want you. These kinds of conversations, these conversations with emotional connection, they change the dance between intimates, friends or partners. They're the basis of our loving bonds. And if we understand them, we can intentionally create them. We don't need to wait for the magic to come and hit us in the head.
We're talking to Sue Johnson, clinical psychologist whose work focuses on bonding, attachment, and romantic relationships. We are talking about friendships, why we need them, close friendships in particular, and how to build them. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have close friends in your life? If so, what do you think it took to build that closeness? Did it feel natural for you, or did it take some work? Have you developed strategies if you've, say, moved from one place to another on creating new friendships, or moved into a new workplace or stage of life? Or do you need some advice from our guest on how to build these kind of friendships? Love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Sue Johnson, clinical psychologist and founder of the International Center for Excellence in Emotionally Focused Therapy. She has advice for us today on building and sustaining better friendships, no matter what stage of life we're at. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What have you noticed about making friends as an adult? Easy? Difficult? Little of both? How about close friendships? Has it been difficult to keep friends close through changing life stages? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to your calls now. Nathan is with us in Eau Claire. Nathan, hi.
Hey there. I just kind of wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on gratitude journaling and how the research is kind of shown how people that may not fully appreciate the relationships that they are, after doing a little bit of that, are able to develop those relationships a little bit more, like, intimately.
And gratitude journaling, Nathan, that's just what it sounds like. You keep a journal of things and maybe people you're grateful for. Is that right?
Well, whether it's people, just, you know, daily things, but I think it's pretty important when it comes to that social anxiety or that other aspect of developing your closer relationships and maybe making you appreciate them a little bit more.
Nathan, thank you so much for calling and bringing that up. Sue, what do you think? Whether it's gratitude journal? Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Nathan's got a beautiful point here. And what speaks to me is that one of the things we see couples do when they've repaired their relationship and they feel safe and connected with each other is they give each other validation and appreciation. You know, it's kind of like we've sort of got out of the habit of that somehow in our society. We're all so busy, we go on to the next thing. And, you know, what we've learned in our work, working with people over the last 30 years, is that it's so powerful to turn and say to somebody, you know, I was in a session the other day and this man turned to his wife and said, you know, I don't want to shut you out. I don't want to turn away from you. So I'm just going to tell you what's real for me right now. I don't know what to do. And that's, I feel like I should know what to do if I'm a man. I don't know what to do. And his wife teared up. But if we just left it there, you know, nothing much would have happened. But she turned up and I said, teared up, and I said, can you tell him exactly how you're feeling right now when he says this to you? And she says, I'm amazed at you. I feel like you've let me in. I don't need you to solve my problems. I need you to be there for me. You're so brave to have said that to me. I never understood that. I love you. You're my special one. You can make mistakes. And then he teared up, and you know, and new things start to happen in their relationship. So validating someone, you know, I think hopefully we do that with our kids. We say, oh, well done, you know, you were scared, but you went down the slide. But somehow when we're adults, we act like we don't need it anymore, and we do. We need for people to, yeah, say, I have gratitude for you. Thank you so much for, you know, I said to an old friend the other day, I really appreciated you sending me those two emails when you heard that I was having a medical problem. You know, you didn't have to do that, and I appreciate your thoughts. Thank you so much. It made a difference. Well, that lights up her world. So yeah, gratitude is important, and the thing about it is, when you give that to people, you create safety, and emotional safety is the essence of a good friendship, a good emotional connection.
Nathan, thanks for that call. We'll go to Lynn now with us in Eau Claire. Lynn, hello.
Hello. Fascinating subject, and thank you. I moved to Eau Claire from the Chicago area about 30-some years ago, four kids. My husband's job brought us here. It was very, very difficult to break those ties, and new ties have not been made, but my sister and I, my remaining sibling and I, they're there for you. They grew up with you, you know, and even though we're miles apart, that's been a bonus.
Yeah, I hear you. And there is something about those attachment bonds in our family. The issue is, of course, some of us don't have those. But, you know, if you do have those attachment bonds in your family, I mean, they're the ultimate resource for a social bonding human being to know that, you know, you can call somebody and they're going to want to hear from you, that your pain and your happiness matter to them, that if you need them, they'll be there. You know, knowing that somebody knows you, sees you, sees you for who you are, accepts you, has your back, this changes the world. You know, without that, the world becomes a very lonely, potentially dangerous place. And that's our emotional reality. That's how our nervous systems respond. That's got nothing to do with us being somehow not mature or somehow weak. That's just the way we are as human beings. So I think it's great that you could turn to your sister and find that connection with her.
Lynn, thanks for sharing that with us. We're talking to Sue Johnson with the International Center for Excellence in Emotionally Focused Therapy. We are talking about friendships, building and maintaining close friendships, and why they're good for us. Back to your calls now. Christian joins us now from Milwaukee. Christian, hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Christian?
So it's funny, last night being New Year's and all, I ended up alone at the end of the night, got separated from some friends. So I'm at home and I just wanted to hang out with somebody. It's New Year's. I'm not completely sober and I want to talk with people. And so I have VR, right? And so I actually went in and I watched in an app called Big Screen, where basically you can either watch a private movie on a big screen or you can be in a virtual movie theater. But, yeah, I mean, I met a guy from Sweden, another guy from Alaska who apparently there's a lot of towns in Alaska with Russian populations, so that was interesting. But, yeah, it's just really cool. It's almost like the days where instant messaging first came out and people were joining in chat rooms, only it's so much more personable because even listening to you guys had a story about some guys that, like, would conference each other through VR. And they never met each other in real life, but when they finally met each other, they felt like they had even more of a connection because they could even read each other's body language, and it's just a cool time to live in.
Interesting. Christian, what do you think, Sue?
Oh, I think that's really resourceful of Christian to do that, you know, and hopefully, cross fingers, that's where the internet's going to go. Not so much for this tweeting and messaging and saying everything fast to, you know, 300 people who you don't know at all. Hopefully we can start to use the internet to really connect us and to have that kind of face-to-face contact. Hopefully we can start to use it like that, because that's important. I mean, I love the idea of that he was alone on New Year's Eve when we all think that we should be with somebody. And personally, I was sleeping, but but you know, I love the idea that he was alone and he went to what he knew, but he used it. He used the technology in a way that made him create a real connection with somebody. You know, he reached out to somebody who was also alone on New Year's. You know, it's one of those moments, New Year's, I guess, when we all somehow feel like, what? I don't know, we're all supposed to be in a wild party or something, or at least in somebody's arms, right? And so it's hard for us. It's hard for us when that's not happening.
Thanks, Christian, for calling. Time for one more call from Jeff in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to share there's two go-to places I have where I want to meet friends because I like meeting new people. Is in the wintertime, I'll go to a curling club. I always meet people that are interesting and friendly in a curling club. And in the summer, I often go to horse racing events. And I know it's worldwide as a sport, but those are two places I always go and I always meet friends.
Jeff, thanks for that call. In our last minute, Sue, getting ourselves out there doing stuff with people with common interests.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. But I also want to emphasize that you can get out there, but if you don't reach for people and take some risks and let them see you and respond to them in the emotional channel, the trouble is those relationships can end up being really superficial. So the more we know about how, you know, caring works, love works, intimate connection works, the better, because then we have a choice. We can actually know how to create these intimate relationships. You know, shared activities are great, but I don't think they're enough.
Jeff, thanks for that call. And Sue, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're most welcome. It was really fun. Nice to talk to you guys.
You too. That's Sue Johnson, author and clinical psychologist who founded the International Center for Excellence in Emotionally Focused Therapy. She was with us today to talk about why we need close friends in our lives and how to build those relationships.